from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. That was President Obama concluding his press conference, which has gone on for the past hour and 20 minutes or so. We're now leaving our coverage of the press conference and of NPR News to take up what has been the dominating story here in the Bay Area since last night. As we've been reporting and as you've been hearing for the past night and throughout the morning, a gas line explosion and fire has devastated a San Bruno neighborhood. To recap the latest news, four people are confirmed dead, though numerous other news accounts have put that number at six. Scores have been injured. 38 homes were destroyed. That's about 15 less than was actually reported last night, though many other homes have been damaged. The fire has now been 75% contained. We're joined by KQED News Tara Seiler, who is at the command center in San Bruno this morning. Tara, since the news conference concluded about an hour and a quarter or so ago, what's been going on since that time? Set the scene for us, if you would, please.
Well, here at the command center in this part in this shopping mall, it's a lot of media, as you can imagine. Some residents were also here milling about. They wanted to see the briefing. They wanted some questions answered as to when they could get back in, you know, into their homes, or to even see if their homes existed anymore. And they were told basically they cannot get back in yet because it's been designated the area is designated a crime scene until the cause. Until they've determined the cause of this tragedy.
That obviously sort of perked everyone's interest this morning when that comment was made that it's being treated as a crime scene. Mm-hmm. Can you fill us any more in on that, Tara, what that designation means?
Well, they just don't know what happened. And PG&E's Chris Johns, who was also at the briefing, said, PG&E does not know the cause yet. And until they do know the cause, they have to preserve the evidence. And I think we have some tape of PG&E.
Yeah, we're going to hear
right
now.
We've yet to be able to get close enough to the actual source to be able to determine exactly why this happened. But we are working diligently to do that. We've been told that the National Transportation Safety Board will be leading an investigation, and we're committed to work with them as quickly as possible to get the answers that I know all of us want to get to and understand. But I want to make sure everybody knows that we are committed to do what's right and what's appropriate to help all of the families and others who have been impacted by this tragedy.
That was PG&E President Christopher Johns talking about their investigation, which at this point, Tara, is unclear because they really, as he was just describing, can't get close enough yet to begin to figure out what happened.
That's correct. It's still too unstable, this 30-inch pipe that ruptured. And, residents had made some calls reportedly to PG&E saying they smelled gas. And PG&E, I guess, is reviewing their records to see if indeed those reports were made.
And here's what Chris Johns had to say about those reports.
Our procedures and processes are if somebody calls in and says that there's a smell of gas, then we immediately try to respond and get out. So, again, I know that there's been news reports of folks that had the reports that people had called in. We're trying to confirm that, and we're looking through our records to see that.
PG&E President Christopher Johns. Tara Seiler is on site at the command center in San Bruno this morning. Tara, the numbers changed somewhat this morning from what was reported last night. Lots of attention last night to 53 homes destroyed, 120 damaged. Those numbers were revised downward. What can you tell us about that new designation of the number of homes destroyed?
Well, the reason it's been changed is that those initial numbers were made with a flyover, and then now the fire chief and others have actually done a walkthrough. And they said basically 38 houses are destroyed and seven have suffered significant damage. All the reporters were asking, well, that's a big discrepancy, seven, and I think last night it was about 129 that suffered damage. And he said, there very well could be some other homes that have suffered damage that they can't see from the outside from their walkthrough and might not be able to see it until they get inside.
Now, in terms of figuring out, of course, the other crucial part of this, the most important part of this, and that is the number of casualties and fatalities. Mm-hmm. We know that there are 4 confirmed dead. Numerous news accounts this morning, as we were just mentioning, have put that number at 6. What are they doing right now to try to figure out how many people were actually killed in this disaster?
Well, I'm afraid they're doing the grim task of you know, going and doing search and rescue operations. They're underway right now. And they're also asking residents to go down to the assistance center, to the shelters, and, you know, report their whereabouts, that they're safe, that they made it out. So that'll help them with that process. They confirmed here that it was 4 killed, but everyone expects that number to go up.
And we should give out the number. If you are safe, if you did live in that neighborhood, the area officials really need you to check in. Here's that number. It's 650-616-7180. 650-616-7180 is the number to call if you do live in that area and you are safe. Because right now, Tara Seiler, we still don't know really how many people are even missing. Is that correct?
We do not. We do not. That was asked, and it's, nobody knows. And I think the death toll number, I mean, I'm afraid to say, is expected to go up throughout the day. That's what they said. But, you know, some people could be with, a lot of people went and stayed with family and friends, but they need to contact the county and let them know that they're okay.
One last question, Tara, and then we'll let you go and get back on the scene. The NTSB, the National Transportation and Safety Board, is expected to begin their investigation soon of what actually took place. When do you expect them to be at the scene? What do we know about when they will actually be digging into what took place?
You know, it's my understanding that they are on the scene.
Oh, okay.
I'll go confirm that, but that's what I heard at the briefing, that they were actually on the scene already. And then, you know, the state has already declared an emergency for this area, and congressional representatives are seeking a similar designation from the federal government. And this, of course, opens up various lines of assistance for those impacted.
Tara Seiler, KQED News. Tara, thanks for providing us with that update this morning.
You're welcome.
And we'll have more, of course, from KQED News throughout the day today and also at kqednews.org. Joining us now is State Senator Leland Yee, who represents the 8th District, and that includes, of course, portions of San Francisco and San Mateo County. Senator Yee, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What can you tell us in terms of the latest and as far as the kind of help that residents there will now be able to get? The state has declared it a disaster area, as we just heard from Tara Seiler. There's hopes that they will get the similar federal designation. But what does that mean in terms of where residents will be able to get assistance?
Well, the county and the city will be coordinating some local efforts. We will be working with them to channel some of the help and assistance. One of the most important issues, as you can imagine now, is to locate everyone. With daylight, there's an opportunity now for the authorities to do a house-to-house identification of any individual missing, the status of a particular home. So that's what's happening this morning.
And is there a place that people can go right now, a central number, a clearinghouse, where people who have been affected by this fire can get assistance?
Well, right now, the Veterans Service Center over at Crystal Springs Road in San Bruno, that's where all the individuals are coming together and to get help. And that's the location that everyone should be going to.
We're going to hear from someone in the Red Cross right after our break. But any other suggestions from you, Senator, about what people need the most? If people around the area really want to provide assistance at this point, what do you recommend?
Well, what I would recommend is to go to the service center and doing whatever you can, either in terms of volunteering time to assist the Red Cross, any food or any clothing. I mean, that's what people are in need now. Long term, it is going to be providing a lot of moral support, counseling for individuals, because you can imagine the night before you were staying at a home, and all of a sudden this inferno and it destroy your home. And now the first daylight, you are going back up there, and you find your life is just completely devastated.
State Senator Leland Yee, I'm sorry, we have to leave it there. We have to take a short break. When we return, we will hear so much more about this situation. We'll get the latest from the Red Cross and others. Senator Yee, thanks for being with us. I'm Dave Iverson. More in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, last night's disastrous explosion and fire in San Bruno. Again, the latest, 38 homes have been destroyed, at least 4 people dead, though we expect that number, unfortunately, to grow throughout the day. We're going to be hearing from a variety of public officials throughout the second half hour. We want you to be able to join us as well. If you have questions, if you live in that area, if you observe the fire, if you have something you can contribute to our conversation, you can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Joshua Johnson of KQED News joins us now. Joshua, what have you got? What's the latest?
Well, we're still awaiting more word on how this gas fire erupted. PG&E, as Tara told you, is continuing to investigate the pipeline to see if that might have been a part of the cause of the fire. One of the things that PG&E's president addressed in the news conference was that a simple pressure fluctuation would not have caused the fire. The lines are designed to be able to cope with that. So we're still waiting to hear more about that. We're also awaiting more word on the dead and the injured. But fortunately, the death toll has not risen since our last report of 4 dead.
Will there be multiple investigations now that will take place? There was this sort of intriguing news in the press conference that they're treating this like a crime scene. We know that the NTSB, the National Transportation and Safety Board, is either on scene or soon will be on scene to conduct their investigation. I assume there will be something that PG&E will be doing, as well as police and fire. How is that process going to sort itself out?
Well, in terms of the crime scene, my thought is that the point behind that is basically to secure it, and because no one knows the cause. It's just like any time that they find somebody dead, they investigate it as if it was a homicide. Same thing. So it's just to keep the scene secure. The NTSB, which does have jurisdiction over pipeline accidents, either is or will be on the scene and becomes the lead agency. Federal regulations give them the authority to lead those kinds of investigations. And then PG&E has its own investigating to do, especially because in 2008, NTSB investigated them for another pipeline accident. I just found on the NTSB's website details of a pipeline accident that happened on Christmas Eve 2008 in Rancho Cordova, which is near Sacramento. And in that incident, the NTSB found what they called, quote, shortcomings in PG&E's response procedures. As a result of that, PG&E told the NTSB that they undertook a number of procedural changes to improve the way that they train field service representatives. Again, this is a similar case in which a resident smelled natural gas, called PG&E, and then somewhere along the way, something went wrong.
And we need to learn, of course, much more about that. There have been these reports that some residents did smell gas. You heard PG&E President Christopher Johns earlier today saying they're going to look into that. They don't know more about that. If any of our listeners listening to this broadcast this morning live in that area, if you indeed did smell gas in the time leading up to this disaster, if you can add a firsthand observation about that, feel free to join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Joshua Johnson, KQED News. Joshua, thanks for joining us. You'll be tracking us throughout the hour. You'll have an update at?
At the top of the hour.
All right, Joshua, thanks very much. We're joined next by Gregory Smith. He is Director of Disaster Services for the American Red Cross, the Bay Area chapter of the America Red Cross. Gregory Smith, thanks for being with us.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Tell us the latest from your standpoint. Do you have enough of what you need for the people you're trying to assist?
Well, certainly. At this time, you know, as we kind of move through the initial emergency phase, our initial chore, our initial task is to provide people with a safe place to be when they first evacuated, and to provide people last night that required a place to an overnight stay, to provide them with that overnight stay. And yes, we have cots, we have blankets, we have the toiletry items and the things that people need, especially when they evacuated without anything, when they had to leave very quickly.
There's always a desire by people in these situations to be helpful, and sometimes people bring what you need and sometimes people bring what you don't. Are there specific items, whether they're items of clothing or cash donations or groceries, that you are in particular need of this morning?
There are a variety of agencies that will respond and provide assistance as this moves through the various phases of the response and recovery. And in there are agencies that have the ability, for example, to accept used and unsorted donated clothing. But right now in the emergency phase for the American Red Cross, the best thing that individuals can do is provide us with the financial support we need, because we don't know what individuals will need in their long-term recovery. So the focus will be on what is happening right now. But it's been my experience that as time goes on, the interest in this will wane. But the individuals that have been affected by this will still require a great deal of assistance.
And if people want to make a donation to the American Red Cross, the Bay Area chapter, how can they do that?
They can do that by contact. They can go to our website at www.bayarearedcross.org, or they can call 1-800-RED-CROSS. And that can get they can get the information. They can get lots of information. They can get information on how they can donate, how they can volunteer, and a variety of other questions if they have any.
Gregory Smith, the Director of Disaster Services for the Bay Area Chapter of the American Red Cross. Mr. Smith, thanks very much for providing
Thank
us that information this morning.
Okay.
Lisa Block joins us next. She's Communications Director for the Blood Centers of the Pacific. And that's a very specific need, Lisa Block, that I understand may be present this morning. Walk us through what would be helpful from your standpoint.
Right. So currently our hospitals are they have enough blood to treat the people that were injured. What we need most from people is to donate blood, especially O negative blood, in the coming days and coming weeks. Because we'll need our blood supply replenished. We had a great outpouring of support throughout the night of donors wanting to make appointments to give. We've got people already lined up outside of our centers, so we're okay for right now. Where we get into trouble is, again, in the days following a tragedy or a disaster, because we've used the blood that was already on the shelves, and we need to replenish that. And as Mr. Smith just mentioned, you know, interest tends to wane after a few weeks, and people want to do something in the immediate, which is wonderful, but people need to remember that we will need to support those who are affected and support our entire community in the coming weeks and indeed coming months.
O negative blood is particularly helpful because it is the universal donor, correct? But I assume you're welcoming people of any blood type?
Right. Absolutely. O negative is the type that can be given to anyone in an emergency, and that's what our hospitals were requiring last night. We had to sort of shuffle blood from some hospitals to another. We actually got some blood imported from outside the state from our friends down at Sanford and some friends in Santa Rosa, but we certainly welcome all blood types. But again, our centers are very busy right now. Our phone lines are very busy. It's wonderful to see this outpouring of support, and we hope that people continue to do that in the coming weeks and indeed coming months. It's kind of reminiscent of September 11th, actually, because so many people wanted to donate immediately, but very few people came back to donate. And so I hope that people will donate in the coming weeks and coming months, and then continue to always have donate, because it was the blood that was donated by our regular donors who are giving all the time that saved these people that were injured in the fire.
And again, you don't have to go to San Bruno, obviously, in order to give blood. You can do that at a local center wherever you are. If people are interested in doing this, what's the best way, the best number to contact?
Sure. We've got centers all over the Bay Area. They can call 888-393-GIVE. That's 888-393-GIVE, or they can visit us at bloodcenters.org to find the center nearest them. I will warn people that the traffic on our phone lines and our website has been pretty heavy, so if they want to try over the weekend or next week, that would be wonderful. It's a great way to make an impact in our community, and I want to thank the donors who have already made the commitment to give.
Well, and that at least is good news indeed. Lisa Block, the Communications Director for the Blood Centers of the Pacific. Lisa, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Again, the number, if you're interested in giving blood, it's 888-393-GIVE. That's 888-393-GIVE. And as Lisa Block just suggested, the number may be busy, but this is going to be a continuing need in the days and weeks ahead. Let's hear from a couple of our listeners who want to add in to what we know and about this situation that's developed now since about 6:30 last night. David joins us first from Concord. David, what can you add to the conversation?
Hey, Hey, good afternoon. First off, my heart goes out to everybody who's involved. Obviously, sad. But leading up to it on in the afternoon, I believe if you open up your boards and it was on 680 in the Fremont area, the smell of natural gas was overwhelming, so much so that I actually was on the call and had made mention of it to the party I was on the call with. So my guess is there probably will be some additional discovery that there was definitely some issue prior to what's happened that PG&E will probably alert us to.
So you're saying you could smell gas on 680 on the East Bay. At what time was that, David?
That was about mid-afternoon all the way through about 4:30.
All right. We'll have to see whether or not there's any connection between what you could sense in the mid-afternoon in the East Bay and what transpired at a little after 6 o'clock on the peninsula in San Bruno. David, thanks for adding that to our information.
Thanks.
Glenn in Felton joins us next. Glenn, go ahead, please.
Hi. So I live in the mountains, in Santa Cruz Mountains in Felton, and because the threat of fire is constant, many of us have organized into what are called Community Emergency Response Teams, or CERTs. And they're organized by the local fire department, and they provide invaluable training of first aid, triage, search and rescue, and so on. And what happens in an emergency then is that everybody is, or many people in the community, are able to pitch together and help out. And while we do this a lot in rural neighborhoods, I would suggest after an incident like this that people in urban areas consider doing this as well, because I think it will help them a lot.
Glenn, thanks. Thanks for that suggestion and reminder. It's true, especially as we approach the anniversary tomorrow of 9/11, that disaster preparedness, planning, thinking about how we can all be prepared for these situations is something that's important to do, because as much as we think about it, as much as we know these things can happen, you're never entirely sure about when and where, of course. And in the end, you're not really believing that it could happen to you. But of course, it did. Why don't we listen to one comment from someone from last night. This is a comment from an area resident who was there and is going to describe the situation. We'll get to this in actually in just a little bit. This is a comment from someone who was in the area and was can provide a description of what he actually saw at the moment the explosion took place. But we'll get to that comment from a resident in just a moment. If we have that ready, let's go ahead and listen. This is Jerry Hiller, who lives on Vermont Street in the San Bruno neighborhood.
And I was watching the ball game just started. And a loud explosion rocked the house, and it shook my house. I'm five doors up from here, from the corner, and it shook my house. And I ran out into the street and looked down, and I saw this huge fireball in this area. And it reached up, I would imagine, about 300 feet in the air. And it was hot. I could feel the heat from it. We went out, and our neighbors, we got them out of their houses, and we were evacuated up to the top of the street all the way over to Sneak Lane. And it's just a terrible disaster. I thought it was the end of the world. It's just like a war zone, you know, smoke and fire and everything burning, and the huge fireball was as high as that cloud is right now.
Jerry Hiller, who lives on Vermont Street in the San Bruno area, commenting on what it all came across like last night as the explosion took place. Again, recapping what we know at this moment, 38 homes were destroyed, 7 more seriously damaged, a number of others also suffered some degree of damage, not clear yet how much that was. Fire as of a little after 8 o'clock this morning was 75% contained. Number of people injured, 4 confirmed dead, though that number is expected to go up. Right now, search crews are going throughout the area making those additional discoveries. Gary Greenfield joins us now. Gary happens to be a close friend of mine. Gary and Risa Tansey's home was burned out during the Oakland fire in 1991. Gary, thanks for being with us.
Hi, David.
We wanted to have Gary's perspective to give us some sense of what people in that area are going to have to contend with at this time. Gary, as you go back to you that time, for you and Risa and your children at that time, Give us some perspective of what that experience is like to lose your home in that sort of sudden fashion, and what perhaps people in the San Bruno area are going to have to contend with now.
Yeah, there are different aspects of it. There's the immediate shock and fright for many people that depended a lot on whether you were there at the time or whether you were gone and came back and found that you didn't have a house anymore. So there's the psychological side of it, which is both short-term and, I discovered, long-term. And then you have to start dealing with the practical side of it, of finding a new place to live and competing, in some cases, with your own neighbors for rentals around the area. You have to deal with what the nature of your insurance coverage. We were lucky in the sense that there were organizations that had developed around the hurricane in Florida that were already ready to help people deal with their insurance.
Gary, we may have lost you for a moment. We'll hope to get back on the line, and perhaps Gary can provide us some additional information about how people can begin to plan for what they're going to do next, because this is a long process. I know in numerous situations in the Oakland Hills, it takes years to figure out, and there's some very practical things that people have to contend with. Where are they going to live? How long will it take to rebuild? What will my insurance cover? We'll try to get Gary back on the line, and perhaps he can provide some suggestions for people living in the area. Gary, if you're back with us, how would you suggest that people who have gone through this, who lost their home last night, is there a kind of to-do list, I guess, that people need to begin to work their way through?
Yes, I think you need to start thinking about where you're going to be, your living situation. There are going to be a lot of organizations that are going to help people. For your kids, you need to be thinking about regularizing their school situation and what kind of resources in terms of emotional help that they're going to need. You need to contact your insurance company to find out what and start that process and get assistance there if necessary. In Oakland, Oakland did a really good job of setting up a center where people could go down and get help with dealing immediately with the governmental agencies like permits for rebuilding, which you have to start thinking about right away. Well, not right away. I mean, initially you need to get clothes and you need to find a place to live, but you need to start taking advantage of those kinds of resources. As I said, Oakland had a center that was that where you could go for everything from work with the SBA to work with different kinds of governmental agencies. That was very effective. And I assume that San Mateo County will be doing somewhat the same kind of thing.
And perhaps it's also important, obviously, we're not even 24 hours into this story yet, so there are, as you suggest, all these immediate things that have to be dealt with front and center first, but to be ready for the long haul, right? I mean, this is something that I know in your family's case and in most others in the Oakland Hills was something that you contended with for years in terms of bringing that to some resolution.
Yes, you have. I mean, besides the obvious problems of rebuilding the physical part of your life, the house and so on, and getting clothes, I found that the fire was sort of like almost a serious emotional trauma, like a death in the family, and that there were long-term emotional impacts on I think all of us. It varied by different people in the family that you really need to be aware of. I found that it affected me emotionally in ways that I had not at all anticipated, that I wasn't sensitive to because I had not gone through anything like that. And that's just something that you have to be aware of. And I think getting counseling initially to talk about that is a really, really important thing to do.
Gary Greenfield. Gary and his wife, Risa Tansey, and their two boys lived through the Oakland fire in 1991. Gary, thanks very much for adding your perspective to what people will have to contend with in the days and weeks and months and years ahead.
Thanks, David.
We're joined next by Dina Gunning. She is the acting public information officer for the city of San Bruno. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
What can you tell us about how the city is trying to respond? We just heard Gary Greenfield, who lived through the Oakland fire, talk about how important it is to provide centralized information so that people have a place they can go to get the information that they need. Can you sketch out for us how the city is beginning to prepare for that circumstance?
Sure. We're actually coordinating our efforts, establishing a local assistance center at the recreation center in the city park to provide just those services, everything from dealing with insurance to mental health, you know, just in a variety of services that will be needed by the effects of the disaster to those citizens.
And if people are in the area and need to find you, how do they find you?
There is a how do you find the local assistance center? Or
yeah, is there a central number or a place that you want people to go? I know there's the general hotline that you want people to check into to make sure that you can check them off the list of people who are missing. But what's the best people for to get in touch with the kind of if they want specific assistance from the city right now?
Yeah, if they do go to the local assistance center at the recreation center that is in the park at the Veterans Memorial Recreation Center, they'll be able to get that assistance. We're going to have laptops set up so that they could check in with the Red Cross Safe and Well website to make sure to let other family members know that they're okay, and people can check to see if they've registered to check if they are okay. As far as getting other resources from temporary housing to, again, dealing with insurance and proceeding with the recovery effort.
Dina Gunning, she is the acting public information officer for the city of San Bruno. Again, if you are in that area and need assistance, the place to go is the Recreation Center at the Veterans Memorial, where they'll be able to provide you with information about how to get started in the rebuilding process. Dina, I know you've been up all night working on this, and I know you have many long days ahead of you. Thank you for joining us, and best of luck to you and all the city officials and to all your residents in San Bruno.
Thank you.
Some of our listeners emailing in this morning. Charles writes in, as I watched the inferno last night in San Bruno and the massive response by fire and rescue personnel, I could not get out of my mind the thought that this could happen to the entire Bay Area in the event of an earthquake. What would be different in such an event would be the inability of fire and rescue personnel to respond, as we saw last night. The event reinforced my commitment to my San Francisco Neighborhood Emergency Response Team, NERT, in order for my neighborhood to deal with such a disaster, as it will overwhelm our fire and rescue system. As we will have to rely on ourselves, I urge all of your listeners to join the local NERT or CERT organizations. They can do so by calling their local fire department. Charles, writing that in San Francisco, important point. Charles, thanks for doing that, that it's important for neighborhoods to be ready in case, as Charles suggests, that local fire is not able to get to a particular situation. Craig in Redwood City writes in, could you please find out why isn't PG&E telling us all the facts about the gas pipeline break, that with antique steel pipelines 50 or more years old, they need to be replaced because they have become brittle with age? Craig writing that from Redwood City. Thanks for that question, Craig. We did hear from PG&E President Christopher Johns earlier today at the press conference saying they can't get close enough yet to determine what actually took place. It's an important question. We'll be continuing to follow that. Obviously, the NTSB investigation will be looking into that as well, and KQED News will continue to cover that story. You can get the latest by going to kqednews.org. If you were near the scene last night, if you have a firsthand observation that you would like to contribute to our conversation, you can still do so. If you have missing family members or someone you're concerned about and you want to get out the word about that, you can call and let us know that as well. Let me give you our number and then some more important numbers, frankly. Our number, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Here are the key numbers. If you want to get help and you need to find out what's going on with the situation in San Bruno, or if you're okay, and that's important too, to let people know what's going on. The number is 650-616-7180, 650-616-7180. That's the hotline number in San Bruno. If you want to help, one key thing, as we heard earlier from Lisa Block at the Blood Centers of the Pacific, is to give blood, particularly if you're O negative. That's the kind of blood that can be given to anyone. They'll need this in the days and weeks ahead. Here's the number to call there. It's 888-393-GIVE, 888-393-GIVE. give. Let's hear what more of our listeners have to add about the disaster in San Bruno. Jeff joins us next in Redwood City. Jeff, go ahead. You're on.
Hi. I'm a fireman in San Francisco. I just wanted to add a couple of facts here about this so people could judge the whole thing a little more accurately. I know when I saw the fire response, there weren't a lot of hose lines, and I found out subsequently that the transmission line, which is often the case, was running close to the hydrant, to the mains, and so they had a serious water disruption.
Right.
But it's also important to know that that's a transmission line, so it's at very high pressure, and the system has to be shut down, which means you need a special crew, and most of these high-pressure transmission lines have a gate valve which has 100 or more turns to close it, and you need a motor to do it. So it's important to realize that when that breaks, it's probably a very small hole, and that's like a pressure can, like a can with hairspray in it that has a tiny hole, and the distance in the break would be 5 miles. So it could take a half hour or an hour for that to bleed down, and you can't put the fire out until that stops. So.
And it was also, of course, particularly hard to put out because of the nature of the source, right? The natural gas itself makes it that much harder. Is that why, Jeff, they were doing the flyover of the various air tankers to drop the fire retardant, something you normally don't see in an urban neighborhood?
Well, I've never seen that before. That's pretty unusual to do airdrops in houses, but I don't think they had any options. There's no water pressure that limits that limits what you can do, but the nature of that, it's so hot and so large that you can't really suppress it any other way until you get the gas off. And even when the gas is turned off, when that valve is off, that could burn down for a long time, a half hour or an hour even, until the pressure goes low enough where it stops leaking. The other thing I just like to keep in mind is tell people that, you know, there's a lot of trouble with local governments, and I think that everybody would probably agree that police and fire are a core function of local government, and even though things are tight, you can never tell when something like this is going to happen. The peninsula is already very, very, we're undermanned, basically, and so when something like this happens, it's just it'd be overwhelming if you're at full staff. So when it comes back to cutbacks, I think people everywhere need to think about what are the basic core things they want from their local government. And even though these things are very, very rare, when something like this happens, you can see the catastrophe that unfolds, and it's a response that's a regional response. There's no single fire department that can put something like this out when you have 100 houses or whatever, 50 houses burning at once.
We'll have to hold you there, Jeff. I'm afraid we're out of time, but thank you for contributing both your knowledge and for making the point about the need and importance of fire services. It was one of the remarkable things that happened last night, the collaboration and cooperation that took place between a variety of fire services and emergency aid workers throughout the Bay Area giving assistance last night. We'll continue to follow this story, of course, throughout the day. For more news about the latest on what's going on in San Bruno, go to KQED.news.org. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.